listen to two married lesbians discuss an LGBTQ plus book each month that highlights the queer human condition as they use connection and humor to relate the issues to us as a queer community. She's Anna.
And she's Miranda.
I am. And we're two married lesbians.
We are.
And we're all queer here.
With a new episode and a new book this time, finally back and on track.
Absolutely. I am joined here on the podcasting couch with three of our undisclosed amount of pugs.
Mm-hmm.
So
we have four.
Well,
the other one's just too hyper.
Mystery.
Yeah.
We
okay.
Need mystery.
Well, it's not a mystery if you follow our Instagram.
Yeah. I was just going to say, if anybody here snores,
mm-hmm.
they're super cute,
right.
And it's not us.
They would not go in their house. Like, they were just being belligerent today.
Yeah.
As belligerent as pugs can be.
Fair.
All right, today we are going to discuss Kings of Beemore.
Mm-hmm.
Publishers Weekly suggests this title for ages 12 and up, and Kirkus Review suggests it for ages 14 and up. It is our firm belief that parents have the ultimate say in what their children should read. And author R. Eric Thomas is gay. He's also married.
Mm-hmm.
He is outspoken about his depression and struggles with mental health. I thought that was very nice to note.
Mm-hmm.
And Kings of Beemore is a 2023 Stonewall Honor book.
Very nice. I gotta say, when you first told me about this book, I had never heard of it. So it was definitely under the radar for me. And it wouldn't surprise me if it was kind of one of those under the radar books for a lot of folks. Before we jump like too far into like plot and everything, I think probably my favorite part about this book was queer joy and black joy. Two things that...
And black queer joy.
And black queer joy. Yeah, the intersectionality of the two. I loved it because it was... it didn't get bogged down in where I think some of the queer media that we get kind of gets really dark, because sometimes it is very dark to be a person, and especially a queer person, and a queer person of color. Like, you know, the more you layer on that stuff, the greater it starts
those identities.
Yeah, those identities. The more likely you are to be caught in circumstances that can really bring it down. So I loved that, even though this book touched on aspects of mental illness and struggles with mental health, that it didn't spend tons of time there. We can always, you know, say, hey, yeah, we understand this is a reality. So many people's lives are touched by it, but we do want to focus on the joy.
Because so often you see more like mental health being handled in like a surviving kind of context.
Yeah.
And this was more in a thriving context.
Yeah, that's a good framing.
Like, we can't forget it's there, and
yeah,
it comes up.
Sure.
But when you're doing really well, it's important to have those moments shared and explored as well.
Well, and especially if you have a really great support system, which the characters that we got introduced here, Linus and Harrison, were that for each other. Even though Linus's father had really struggled with a divorce with Linus's mother, you could tell that he was very invested in Linus's life and wanted to be there for him. So it was, I really loved that it was kind of that fun teen romp comedy, but applied to something more akin to where we would see ourselves in media, right? I mean, we're not people of color, but relating to that queer joy was a really fun connection point. And even if you feel like a super weird person that hangs out in cemeteries,
yeah,
I loved that part. And then that one statue where they called what did they call her, DJ Turn It Up. I loved that. I mean, you really can, it's almost like queer religion, right? Like, you find these places of worship where you can you can be yourself fully. You don't.
And they're sacred to you.
Yeah, they're sacred to you.
Well, the cemetery for a moment, because it's there in the opening, kind of mm-hmm. like creeped me out. But then at the same time, I can see where it's peaceful and quiet, and it doesn't have sure. to be creepy. So I kind of sure. like that there was kind of the play on that.
Yeah.
And even
had the historical aspect that Linus loves so
yeah,
much.
Yeah, and he mentions that he was more interested in the dash between the years.
Yeah, I loved that.
And that kind of like really, I mean, looking back on it now, it really sets the tone for like how they're spending their time together
mm-hmm.
with the time that they have left in mm-hmm. the same city.
Yeah. I loved a lot of the like internal dialogue that Harrison had, and then some of it became more external, but where he was talking about how the songs in a musical are when you can't find the words to like truly explain something. And I really loved that idea, because
we don't just bust that into song, although sometimes you do feel like it.
I sometimes do bust out.
Well, not just, in public.
Well, sometimes I do. Along that same line of thought, I also liked kind of Harrison's inside thoughts versus outside thoughts. Like, you know how sometimes you have this idea, this belief, this feeling that it feels true and pure and safe in your own mind, in your own body, but it's so difficult, and you kind of risk ruining it when you take it outside of your body and you try to communicate it. I loved that wording that our author used to kind of describe that, and the way it was something that kind of was this through line throughout the entire book, and that you saw like this growth in Harrison as he was trying to give this beautiful gift to his friend Linus of a day without worry, a day full of fun, another line I really liked was, by the way, I'm gay. It's a great opener.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're searching for an icebreaker out there, just...
Yeah, or like you're at like small talk with someone mm-hmm. you like is going mm-hmm. poorly, you can be like, hey.
By the way, I'm gay. And oh, new information.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Mm-hmm. And just see how they respond. Like,
yeah.
Put them in the driver's seat.
Yeah, and if they're a terrible person, then you run away.
Oh, I was envisioning it like a... You're talking to someone you like, but like the small talk is dwindling, and you can be like, hey, I'm gay. By the way, I'm gay.
Yeah.
And then you can see if the other person's gay, and talk about being gay, how you are gay.
You're
and maybe
each
you'll
gay.
Leave and be gay together and do that kind of thing.
Or you leave and you each are gay together, but separately, because you're not into each other.
Gay together, but separately?
Like
friends?
Gay in parallel.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Not
mm-hmm.
perpendicular.
No.
Math. I do love that Linus is really supportive, and he went to all of Harrison's plays, and he goes to his family movie nights. I thought that was like a really sweet thing, because some of
yeah.
the movies like were old, and he doesn't seem to like any of them, but
yeah.
he liked Hamilton's. Like, and then I think the family was like, that's not a movie, it's a musical. And like, it's a recording of a musical, it's a movie. So he was trying to...
arguing on semantics.
Yeah, and he was trying to get Linus to be like, or trying to, you know, Linus saying that was his favorite movie to like be the best one they've showed so he could win.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I also, I forgot to mention this because I really loved it, but it was a line that Harrison had mentioned. He goes, an outside thought loose in the wild. And I was like, yeah, it's like sometimes you just say something, you're like, oh snap, I don't know how to walk that back and put it back inside.
It's too late.
It's too late. Cast out of the bag.
Mm-hmm.
The gaze out of the closet. Why is that not a saying?
Because you don't want to rush that.
True. True. And I guess that kind of indicates like it being a fun... frivolous thing when it could be really scary and
serious and frightening.
Serious, yeah. So, well, never mind. That's an outside thought loose in the wild.
It is. I think what was really a moment for me was when they were talking about their college majors and trying to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was like, what do you do with a history major? And there are just options and skill sets with each major that
mm-hmm.
you pick. And you don't necessarily know what you're going to do with it, but you need a higher level of thinking for the jobs that skill set applies to. And I think just as a society, we can be bad at applying, oh, you were a math major, you don't have to be a teacher. That skill set applies to this or that, you know, that kind of thing. I think we're bad as a society looking into that because, you know, Linus's dad was kind of trying to focus him in on what he wanted to do post high school. So you have like that kind of coming of age of like moving on, and then you kind of get bulldozed by Linus is leaving,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I think that, you know, that becomes the focus, but, you know, they had a, he had a good point where he, I think Harrison was wondering if he questions if you can have a long distance friendship.
Yeah.
Early on in the book, because, you know, he says, you know, long distance relationship, you visit each other, you can kiss each other, you
yeah.
cutesy videos, and, you know, you're up all night on the phone, lovey-dovey stuff, but he's like, friendship doesn't work like that.
Well, but I mean,
to a degree, you know.
I would argue that it does. Like, I know, not so much anymore, but in the past, like, I would have long distance friendships with people that I'd never met in person, or later, like a year or so later, met in person, surrounding like gaming. And so like we would all, you know, play the same game and play together. And so like I learned a lot about these people, felt really bonded with them, to the point that like I went on vacation somewhere and I was like, oh, so-and-so lives here.
And then you meet up with them.
Well, I think that one, it didn't work out, but I was like, where should I go? What are the best restaurants or whatever the best blah, blah, blah. And we were going to meet up, but then for whatever reason, it didn't work out. But yeah, I get that because like if the...
They've only had a friendship IRL.
Yeah, in real life. Exactly. I'm old. But like, yeah, I get that part because like their friendship kind of grew in kind of a non-traditional way, right? Where it was like they were close and then, you know, because they're both their families went to the same church and then they had pulled away and then I guess they got in contact with each other via email and then kind of grew the relationship in that way. And so it seems like, and I mean, you get more context into it later where Linus's father is basically a single father and he's doing what he can to make ends meet and that's a challenge. And so there isn't a lot of money for tech that would make life easier to communicate from afar. I think it was really interesting that you saw these different skill sets between Harrison and Linus and like how Harrison felt so like lost and unmoored because Linus is the planner. And so he's sitting here trying to plan a magical Ferris Bueller's day off for them,
which I think was much better than the film.
I would agree. I want to see this as a movie so badly. I absolutely loved Harrison's sister Corinne. She occasionally was giving me major Charlie Springs sister vibes.
Just kind of always popping up.
Yeah, she's just popping up and like seemed very wise to what's going on, even when the characters aren't quite, you know,
sure what they're doing. Yes.
Yeah, I loved it. At one point there was a comment about, I'm trying to remember what it was in regards to. But Harrison made this comment that it was, I think it was like, maybe it was like theater. Maybe that's what it was, performing. And he was like, it's like a Zoom call on mute and everyone is talking with their eyes. And I was like, that's like this really powerful thing that I think, you know, any of us that have been on a video call can kind of relate to, because when you remove that ability to actually say what you mean, and it's all just this nonverbal communication. I don't know. It's just, I loved the imagery that kind of was conjured up in this book. You know, I know a lot of us out there deal with like anxiety or different things like that. And I enjoyed that was interwoven throughout the book. But yet it wasn't this is an obstacle they have to overcome. Sure, it was, because it is for everybody all the time. But, like, I loved how it wasn't like the book hung on to that. Like, hey, this is what we have to, this is our lesson. It was just like, hey, this is the thing, because it is a thing. And then the characters were like, well, we'll have to figure it out. Like, when they're at what they referred to as the Black Smithsonian in D.C., which was kind of this on the fly, oh, no, the plan's not working. Let's do this. And Linus just got so overwhelmed and was like, I can't do this. I can't go down this escalator through time. And he was like, I'll just meet you elsewhere, right? I mean, that happens. Like, sometimes, no matter how beneficial or necessary or important or emotionally relevant something is, sometimes you're just not in a place to do it right then, and you have to kind of step back and regroup and then reapproach. And I really appreciated that part where it was like, and this is still valid, that he's gonna have to kind of explore this, you know, in a little bit different way that doesn't feel so confrontational, because he just kind of can't handle it right now. What did you think was up with the creepy
white guy,
off-putting, racist acting white guy?
That he thought that they were playing around when
because he was like chasing Harrison at first.
But they weren't. Like,
he wasn't. Yeah, he was never doing any of the things that guy was accusing him of doing.
I think he just, you know, wanted to exude his dominance in a black space, and he just singled them out. I mean, that's
well. Really... But then he followed them throughout. I mean, to me, it read as this metaphor for something that many, if not all, black people in America have had to deal with in small or large ways, where they're followed or, you know, accused of something they had nothing to do with. And okay, you know how in most movies, TV shows, media, that have any sort of historical perspective, you're like, oh yes, we see slavery. Oh yes, we see terrible racism where people are harmed. Like, that is very real and present. It's part of history, no matter how much some people want to not have that be part of history. And yes, that's real. Yes, that's valid. Yes, we need media like that so that we as humanity can go, that's terrible. We don't want things to be that bad ever again. Let's continue to move forward. But then also on almost the opposite end, you have things like Bridgerton, where we have black people and white people. We have a black queen of England, ? And like...
Yeah, I think it's England.
Yeah. And there's no real reason why racism is solved in this alternate history, and why there's no reason why we have a black queen. There's no reason why in literally the place colonialism just was born from.
Took off, yeah.
Yeah. Just no context. I'm like, sure, it's a romp and it's fun, but like... It's a specific romp. But like, you have at either end, you have like these two things. And then somewhere in the middle, there's like this spectrum of experiences. To me, I loved that Kings of B'more had like this, hey, the vibe of our book is we're going to have a fun, nerdy teen movie romp. That's the core. We do want to show that there is anxiety and there is loss and there is racist attitudes and things like that. We want to show all of it because it's true and accurate. But those things that happen to all of us will not stop us from showcasing queer and black joy. And to me, that is a beautiful, like, chef's kiss blend of those two extremes, because that is reality to me. That is reality.
And then you have the bus driver later.
I loved that he was like, yeah, he was like, you didn't do that.
You didn't, yeah, you're fine.
I will protect you. I will take care of you.
That was really sweet. And that, you know, there shows that there are people out there, you know, in any, you know, given time that will stand up for that. I mean, yeah. I feel like sometimes too few of them, but I loved that that was in there.
That was one of my favorite inclusions because, A, thank goodness, we love those boys. They should be cherished and taken care of. But also, that is a perfect encapsulation of how to be an ally, right? That, like, that's a stark contrast to Racism the Man, that character, and what those showcase about the choices we as humans can make, we as allies can make, to choose to do better, right?
I loved when they got to Pride that they comment on how glad they were to see a bunch of black faces at Pride.
I know, I loved that.
Because I think it's sad when I go to different Pride events, whether it's something at the library or something at a local bar or the, you know, a section of the Pride Parade or whatever, and it is very whitewashed, you know.
Yeah.
Because you want to see the full, I mean, the full spectrum of our spectrum.
Queer people exist across all races, ethnicities.
Disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So I just loved that they were like, just, they couldn't believe how many, you know, people like them were there. And I think that's really important for young queer people of color to see.
Mm-hmm. In general. Well, and I think it's, again, talking about, you know, speaking about allyship, it's important that people who are trying to organize something, if you don't see brown and black faces, like people of color also organizing that, also being a part of that, then find them. They exist. They're everywhere. You know, I know we've talked about before where not occasionally, that's the wrong word. Sometimes we see cisgendered white gay men that
dominate.
Yeah, that, like, they got through the door.
Talk too loudly.
They didn't hold it open. Like, you have like a very clear, very real.
No, I see that a lot, especially in, like, you know, that's been criticized for certain, at least in the Dallas area, of being on certain queer planning committees, mm-hmm. of, you know. Okay, well, we have one person of color. Okay, now they're a token, and that's terrible. Like, you need, you know, or they only have one woman, you know, and mm-hmm. it's like, well, we only need the one. Like, okay, calm down. Lesbians are cool. Okay.
I agree with that statement.
But they've been doing it for so long, and they're just still in that kind of, like, 1990s frame of mind that when you look at the current year, it's kind of shocking to see. And they're getting better.
Yeah.
But it's taken time because sometimes, like, I know, I wouldn't necessarily feel comfortable in a space that was just a bunch of, especially middle-aged white gay men. I mean, we can talk about certain things, but they're not going to be able to maybe empathize with my experience.
Okay, so
the burden feels like it's on the new, different person. Does that make sense?
Nobody's new or different.
Yeah, but like, I would say, like, me as a white, non-binary lesbian coming into...
Yeah.
Predominantly cisgender, assuming, right? Cisgender, yeah. Gay white men.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I'm the different one, predominantly. So I have to, like, make concessions and talk about what they want to talk about. And meet them where they feel comfortable versus them making me feel...
Because you don't
want
to be pushed away.
Right. Versus making me feel welcomed and accommodated.
Well, I think that's the challenge, then. The challenge to people is, if you look around and everybody looks like you... then get out there and try to make some new friends. Try to find people that challenge you as far as thoughts, challenge, you know, your friend group to grow, right? I mean, as humans, we often tend to have, like, this in/out group approach to people. in-group feels safe, out-group indicates potential danger. Well, we're kind of past that. Like, the danger is coming from inside the house, as it were. Like, we need to focus on bringing people in and relating. I mean, that's my challenge to folks. If you don't see enough diversity in your friend group, try something new, try something different, meet new people, because people all across the board are rad. And you won't know that if you don't go meet them.
And we'll be right back. And we're back.
I do want to circle back to the museum. I loved that kind of like beautiful, blissful moment where they were enjoying like this art that was just basically black joy. And to me, that moment really just exemplified what seeing yourself reflected in media does. It's so important. It's not just, oh, it's kids stuff. Oh, it's just entertainment. Like, oh, that matters. When we normalize that it is worth the money, time, and attention to tell the story of someone that isn't a cishet white person.
Well, it was a museum for African Americans.
I agree, but like,
but the fact that they have that museum,
the same.
Right.
Because there's time, money, and attention paid to
celebrating. And they even called it the Black Smithsonian, emphasizing the appeal, because the Smithsonian is huge.
Yeah, but I just think that's so important. That's why it matters when people make casting choices that uplift queer artists, that uplift people of color, because they are just as talented and just as deserving of those roles. And I would even argue, when you can perform from that lived experience, it can be a deeper, more rich performance or song, painting, you know, what have you, whatever the media is.
I love that Harrison refers to Linus as a nerd dad. That's so Miranda.
I am a bit of a nerd dad, and I love the like fashion dad core.
Yep.
Is that in your notes?
Yep. I was like, random.
So. I'm pretty cool.
If you're Linus, that makes me Harrison.
Oh, yeah, I can.
But we're together, so. Did it bother you that it didn't address that they never really were interested in each other?
No, that was fine. Like, you
can.
Just
always friends?
You can be queer and be friends.
I know, but like.
I have lesbian friends that I've never slept with.
Same.
Slash never dated.
I'm just saying, I thought it was interesting, at least because this is a young adult book, that they hadn't, you know, ever thought about they would get together at some point. I'm just kind of curious.
Well, I mean, there was...
It's so hard to find a book about true friendship.
Yeah, and that's what I loved about this. It was like, hey, here's this fun buddy comedy. They're queer. They're black. They're amazing. Enjoy. When Harrison got Linus over to the thrift shop where his non-binary crush Maz worked, and then like as Harrison kind of witnessed Linus and Maz's like chemistry, like there was this moment that he kind of felt almost like a little bit of jealousy, but it was far outpaced by his love for his friend.
Yeah, and I think we just see that as like when a friend starts dating someone new and they're all about that person, and mm-hmm. a lot of that time gets taken away from you, and it's like you're not necessarily jealous because you like the friend, you're jealous because like it's taking
you
up
want that time,
you want some of that time back, mm-hmm. or as a group hang or something.
Yeah,
but
it's changed.
Yeah,
what
the dynamics
were
orbiting because they're orbiting around somebody else right now, and so it takes a while for them to get back to you.
Yeah.
Let's talk about when those white guys mistake Harrison for their old friend Jamal.
Oh my god,
that was really uncomfortable. I don't know why they played it off. I guess because it just got awkward. Like he didn't step in. I don't know. I just think it was ridiculous.
Yeah, I was like,
you had to be white, right? That's just what I was assuming.
I don't know. I didn't get a read on his race.
But they hung out for like a long time.
But yeah, it did kind of feel like that whole white people think all black people look the same, and like, that's not cool.
Mm-mm.
But I love that they used it to their advantage, that they were like, that, like, shoehorned it into this party invite at the Evergreens.
That's pretty great.
I mean, I really want to go to wherever that place is. If Evergreens is like a real place, okay, do any of our listeners live around? Because was that in Baltimore?
We can Google it.
Okay. But like, I just...
Yeah, Baltimore.
Yeah, okay. Well, they ended up in D.C. at one point, so I was like, wait a minute, where were they? It felt like the description of it felt so magical. Like this beautiful, colorful place that's just full of like dancing and emoting just queer joy. And like everybody's there together and everybody's just kind of vibing and having this most amazing time. I will say, so there's a character we hadn't really talked about yet, Aparna. I was obsessed with Aparna.
Same.
And like, she, I love like how her notes were basically like stage direction. Like, it was written as stage direction. And like, her whole deal was like just being so on top of everything and having control. And like, that's how she felt seen, was by just kind of creating the outcome of a situation. And what did you think when cool Aparna shows up and then Aparna is like kind of forced to deal with her, or I guess chooses to, because cool Aparna is shoplifting,
right?
And Aparna steps in and is like, hey, put her, I'm paying for it, like, put it on my tab,
right?
Like, what did you think about that? And then like their whole discussion afterward where cool Aparna was like, it doesn't matter, it's not a big deal.
No, she said that the girl she runs into from school was shoplifting, and she, when she, you know, she pays for it, and then the girl suggests doing more crimes, it kind of felt like they were the good bad angels on your shoulder. Because like, no, and the girl's like, do more crimes? And she's like, no, come on, we're going here.
Yeah, I thought that, so when you were growing up, or even like into college or whatever, did you ever meet another Anna?
I'm sure along the way, yeah.
Oh, apparently it never stuck out in your mind. I never met another Miranda, but like, I know that there was always seemed to be two girls with the same name. Like, oh, there's two Rachels. And like, I always thought it was really mean when like one of them was like taller or something and the other one was shorter, and they'd call them, oh, that's Big Rachel and Little Rachel. And I was like, I mean, they're more than their height. That feels kind of damaging. But like, I don't know how I felt about one being referred to as cool Aparna. But I did like...
I guess I didn't catch the name similarity. Oh, okay.
Well, so Aparna herself referred to cool Aparna as cool Aparna.
Okay.
So like, the fact that she named her that, even like when she accidentally calls her that, Aparna was like, what? But like, they talk about two different people, like, to your point, it was like kind of like a good angel, bad angel. Two people that were very, very different and looked at things in very different ways, because cool Aparna was like all about being actually seen and wanting that attention. And then you kind of understand that part of it is her parents don't give her attention, and it doesn't seem like she really matters to them much as far as what she does, which later plays out to help everybody, because she's like, Aparna is supposed to be running the backpack back with like the house iPad and everything, and cool Aparna ends up taking her in the convertible, and and then like somehow the backpack gets left, and like the, all this, you know, drama.
Ching.
And but I really loved what Aparna said, where she was like, well, I do feel seen, because what I am cultivating is how I'm seen. Like, I am the stage manager. I ensure everything goes off without a hitch. That's how I'm seen. I'm the editor of, you know, the yearbook or the paper or whatever. Like, when everything comes out perfectly, that's how I'm seen. Like, my efforts and my influence is what I am presenting to the world. Like, that's my facade. And I really liked that. Although, at the end, when they see Kula Parna in the convertible, and they're like, oh my gosh, can we please drive in this convertible? Because, like, that's the only part of Ferris Bueller's Day Off that we couldn't get to. And she's like, no, and just drives off.
Yeah, there was a lot of comedy there. I just appreciated it.
Yeah, for sure. Because you were like, well, for sure she's going to let him. And then she was like, no. It felt very perfect for her character. She's very much, like, chaotic. One of the other comments that I really enjoyed was the family finds a way to fit into whatever words we give it. You know, because, I mean, obviously in our queer lives, a lot of times we have chosen family because sometimes our family isn't as accepting or supportive as we need them to be. I really liked that. And even when Linus reaches out to his mom, and they have, like, this really difficult conversation, and I think it was really healing where he you know, was like, why wasn't I enough for you? Why did you want a clean break? Because that kept coming up. I just thought that was really healing for him to be able to have that conversation. And then that phrase or that concept of people that feel broken deserve joy. I thought that was really important.
I think, too, you know, the friendship angle is amazing. Mm-hmm. I think you're, you know, having a really good queer friend who gets your level of queerness.
Yeah.
Because they're both gay.
Yeah.
Is really important. So,
well, because you don't have to explain context.
You just explain why you're nervous, why it matters, and whatever school context or whatever. They just get it. Mm-hmm. And I just think, so the fact that they're...
It's like a common language.
Yeah. So I think you have, you know, as I'm processing it now, I'm thinking of, there's an extra layer here that, you know, at the end when he's like rushing back to say goodbye, it's not just losing a friend. It's losing your best friend who is also queer,
yeah,
who gets you on a level that a best friend, a straight best friend,
yeah,
wouldn't get you on. And so I think that's why this book is so touching, because you have all these elements of, you know, the Ferris Bueller's Day Off and that kind of nostalgic,
yeah,
memories for our generation, but you also have the friend who really, really gets you, and that's the one who's leaving.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, for some reason that hadn't clicked with me till just now, but one of my, what I wrote about this was, and this is going to date me because we don't have merry-go-rounds on playgrounds, but basically they were these contraptions with a bunch of handles, and it was a circle, and you grabbed on.
And it would spin.
You spun it really fast and tried to hold on. So I said this book was like riding on a merry-go-round and tilting your head back. So you could also stand and do, you weren't supposed to stand, but you could stand and tilt your head back and watch the sky blaze above you for that like nostalgic moment of like what this book felt like to me.
Yeah.
That nostalgic really point of that. I don't know. I just was reading it and I jotted that down and I was like, that's what it was. Cause like merry-go-rounds were very fun. It was a sense of childhood. You know, yeah, they're at this pivotal moment where, like, I feel like they would hang out at, I mean, I know they prefer cemeteries, but they'd probably go to a playground, you know, and play.
Yeah.
Like, they just have that sense of joy. Yeah. It's not childishness. They just have a sense of joy, you know?
Yeah.
And, like,
they want to go to a safe place,
yeah,
where adults aren't going to,
yeah,
get on.
They haven't lost that yet. And, you know, I think as we get older in life, we sometimes do lose that sense of joy.
Yeah.
So I just felt it was like that. Just, you
know, I really liked that. I also, I don't know if you were like me and like when you first see, when we first meet Corinne and she's back from college and like Harrison's struggling because he's like, I don't understand why we were close and then now we're not together. I don't know about you, but for me, I was like, did she go off to college and realize she's a lesbian and then like had like this?
You would, yeah, you would want
that. Well, because she was powering up her crystals in the backyard and talking about horoscopes, and there were some kind of
stereotype. Okay, there's a sapphic element. I agree.
Which, whether she is or she isn't, you know, whatever, that didn't matter. But then, like, at the end, you do kind of get that context for why she left school, and she, like, shaves her head, and she was like, I was just so sick of white people touching my hair, and that was, I mean, obviously, that's a thing that's highly inappropriate that many white people do without thinking about how upsetting and wrong it is to...
Yeah, the only white people who should be touching your hair is your hairdresser. And I'm going to assume you don't go to a white hairdresser. So therefore, none.
None is the
answer. Do you see how I came back around to that? Yeah. No one. No white people should be touching your hair.
Correct. Unless you happen to
have a bee in it or
dating
something.
A white person you were like, do I have a bee in my hair?
Could you swat it away, please?
Please.
But then don't caress my hair after that. Just swat the bee away.
Exactly. But my point was, like, again, that's one of those things that this book kind of masterfully weaved in. We didn't have to live in it, but we needed to hear it, understand it, and go, oh, okay, I see that this is kind of this thing of, like, her personhood was not being respected as she went away to college, which should be this time where you can blossom and be your full self. Because you're not worried about, like, what your parents think. And maybe she felt so constricted.
Maybe her story is the sequel. I would read that.
I would read that, yeah.
Queer or not. I mean,
I Queer or not, yeah. Because I just envision, like, this from her perspective is her following the iPad and being like, what? Why? What?
All right, so you're rating.
Wait. One more. Okay, so you remember how there were two boys on motorbikes that we just kept seeing. They kept weaving in and out of traffic. Mm-hmm. They were like popping wheelies, or they were like, you know, like next to each other. Because I thought about them a lot, and I was like, why are they there? Why is the author putting them there? Why do we keep seeing them? I thought that they were kind of like this metaphor for Linus and Harrison's friendship and like the future of their friendship. And about how, like,
there will be obstacles.
But
like traffic.
Long distance, exactly. Long distance wise, they will be able to maintain this friendship and kind of continue to be friends with that ever evolving, you know, the ever evolving aspect of each of themselves, you know? So, oh. The last line that I absolutely loved was strange and beautiful and magical and dazzling. And I just thought that that was what a great way to describe the queer experience, you know? But anyway, okay. On to the...
Well, so I really liked this book.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was great to have a nice, happy summer read.
Mm-hmm. And it was about queer friendship, which we don't see often. There's always a love story, which I kind of was, but it was more,
like,
of
more of a crush.
Hey, go see your crush.
Yeah,
cool,
or
cool,
they
cool.
want to, you know, get kissed.
That wasn't the focus.
Yeah, the friendship wasn't on the peripheral. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I gave it 4.5 rainbows. I was disappointed at the end. Like, I wanted a plan for how they were going to stay in touch.
Or, like, somehow somebody got his dad a job or something.
Well,
that they could stay.
I didn't mind that he was going to move.
Leaving. Okay.
I just wanted, like, okay, here's the deal, and I'm going to come back and visit on the... I'll see you in 2 weeks. Something. Yeah. Something concrete, because I know... I think the author did that to really solidify their friendship, and we know they're going to be friends moving forward. Mm-hmm. I just really wanted to know... I wanted a guarantee, and I know that's terrible.
Well, I don't think that's what the important part is. The important part is we have hope. You don't have to have certainty in the future, because the nature
of
the future...
Some people like certainty.
Oh, my.
I'm just saying, like, I'm just...
You wanted it all planned out.
No,
what you're saying is you're a lioness.
No, I wanted to be like, hey, I'll see you at Christmas. Hopefully before then. So I wanted something.
You wanted a date in the calendar.
But it wasn't as cutesy, I guess, as how we ended up. What would you rate it?
I loved it. I do the things that I wish had been different. Like, I wish we could have spent more time with Corinne.
Possibly gay Corinne or queer Corinne.
Yeah, some sapphic undertones would have loved to explore. I loved Aparna. I wish we could have explored her world a little more. I loved the boys' friendship. I also wish we could have seen that friend group too. Even though I know that they kind of felt like oddballs. Like, I love the touch points of movie night. I wish we could have spent more time in movie night. Like, I enjoyed their friendship and that world that they lived in, that I just wanted to be in it a little more. I think I would, I don't know. I probably would have to go, I'd agree with you, 4.5 glittering rainbows.
I'm going to go ahead and put it on blast that our author does some of the writing for Dickinson.
I love that
which
show.
Which is on Apple TV Plus.
Yeah.
And I don't spend a lot of time on Apple TV Plus because I'm Netflixing or Huluing a lot. But I don't recall very much gay content. So if they want to just hire him to write this as a show
there,
or a movie.
There was sapphic content on Dickinson.
Well, okay. There was, but not a focal point for that. So I just want to put Apple TV Plus on blast and be like, Anna Wall would like to formally request Kings of B-More be made into a
please
series or a
you.
Movie. Please and thank you. A long movie. Don't like 90-minute me. I want a long, drawn-out movie.
You want it at least, like 2 hours.
Yeah. Okay. Please and thank you.
Please and thank you. Well, it is important that you put a please and thank you on it.
Always, yeah. Especially when you say you're putting them on blast.
Oh, you start hot.
Start hot.
And then you end polite.
Like a cup of tea. Can I get you a cup of tea? Let's talk about it. So I just would really love, especially since the author already writes for TV, like,
yeah.
I think it would just be so easy to adapt. I mean, I think easy, not that any writing project is easy.
I would absolutely love, like, a buddy comedy teen romp of this would be
because there's so many
phenomenal.
Humorous parts that I think would just play out really well on screen.
My goodness, yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, why is it not a movie already?
And with two gay boys of color as the leads, like, has that even been done?
No, but it needs to have already been done.
If it's been
done,
it's
gonna be amazing.
Hit us up. I want to watch it because
we haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. If
we want to see it,
yeah. If it hasn't been done, what's damn time?
Oh my.
Woo!
Anna's pulling out cuss words.
Okay, well.
That's how upset they are.
All right, so we'll end it there. But our our next read for August is Page Boy by Elliot Page, which is a memoir.
Excited for
this. Our last memoir was All Boys Aren't Blue. And that was like memoir part, like advice.
Manifesto.
So, manifesto, yes. Queer manifesto. So we hope that you enjoy Page Boy as much as we do, and we'll get ready to discuss it.
Well, I don't know how much I'll enjoy it yet, but I'm sure I'll love it.
I can't go wrong.
I saw, can't remember how long ago, when I was trying to watch a Dallas Wings game, because I'm now into the
WNBA. No, we're not talking about this.
But no.
Until next time, we're all... I'm just kidding. Next time.
But anyway, I saw Elliot Page was being interviewed on, like, ABC News or something.
Very cool.
Yeah, so I didn't watch it because I was trying to find a basketball game. But anyway, you're right, Anna, for next time. So until next time,
we're all queer here.
Absolutely.